Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, fellow Otherworld Explorers. I am Hercules Invictus of the Olympian Arcanate. Welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods, an ongoing Olympian initiative seeking a better understanding of the astral forces interacting with Gaia, in this case UFOs and extraterrestrial entities. Tonight, I'm proud to bring you the Disclosure Network podcast with Nick Curto, co-founder of Disclosure Network New York, also known as DNNY. Welcome, Nick, and thank you for being here with us tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure, Hercules. Thank you so much for your warm welcome. And DNNY is a grassroots organization, now happily celebrating our 25th year of providing two meetings a month throughout the year in Manhattan, New York City. We focus on cutting-edge UFO ET issues, also paranormal phenomenon, which is quite extraordinary, as well as many important and very related subjects from a wide variety of sources as we go deep into these exciting and sometimes very misunderstood areas that the mainstream media will not talk about or ever disclose. Our members do intensive, deep research into these various areas, cutting-edge topics, and share that information with our group at our DNNY meetings and on the internet as well. We do now a Zoom meeting on the third Thursday of the month from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Throughout 2024, and it's for our DNNY members. And because it's a Zoom, we have members now not only from the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, but worldwide also. We also produce a face-to-face meeting in the West Village of New York City at a wonderful place called The Center at 208 West 13th Street on the very first Sunday of each month, and that goes from 2:30 sharp till 4 p.m. We then have a coffee hour at a nearby coffee shop at 4 p.m. directly after our meeting. We have special guests that do amazing talks, either live there or on a video. We have a big screen to project that. And after their talk, we have a Q&A so people can talk about what their questions are, and the presenter can answer that. Tomorrow, unfortunately, which is the first Sunday of January, we had to postpone our meeting, our live meeting, to Sunday, January 7th, next Sunday, because of the bad winter weather that's been happening and more predicted for this entire weekend. Our DNNY Sunday meetings deal with current hot topics, and this year looks like a lot of news about ETs, UFOs, and paranormal phenomenon more than ever, and we're really feeling that already. So it's going to be quite a year coming up, our 25th year. Our motto right from day one is, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to our DNNY members worldwide the DNNY News Blast email service daily, focusing on the topics of special interest. And it's about as cutting edge as it gets. Now, for the folks out there who like membership information, and I hope you do, you'd be more than welcome to join us. I'm going to give you my email address, and I'll repeat it just so you have it. And just give me an email and let me know you're interested, and I'll send you that information about membership joining. And that can be from anywhere now in the world. My email address is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, nicknyny1 at gmail.com. Okay, with that said, I get right to it with our very special featured guest for this evening, and that is none other than my dear friend and colleague, Bruce Cornett. Bruce, a very warm welcome to you, sir.
Thank you, Dick, very much, and also Hercules, for having me on your show.
I always enjoy interviewing you, and you have, I know, quite a very personal and incredibly interesting paranormal story that's happened to you. And as I know, and people who know you, you are a very deep in research, and you're a facts kind of guy, and you run numbers, and you look for what's really there. So when it comes to anything like we're talking about, either ET, abductions, or paranormal phenomenon, you're a hard guy to convince, and I like that a lot. I like that about you, that you really examine things deeply. And your personal story tonight that you're going to happily share with me and our listeners is quite extraordinary. So please, set it up for us, will you?
Oh, I would love to. I spent 14 years in college getting 3 degrees in biology and geology and paleobotany and palynology at Penn State, and graduated in 1977. Then I went on to work for various oil companies and down in Houston, Texas, where I analyzed the spores and pollen that they extracted from drill cuttings to age date the rocks that they were drilling in. And that was quite an extraordinary period of time. The thing that I enjoyed most about that was that I was dealing with factual information, fossils that were microscopic, that you could identify and determine the age of the rocks based on the assemblages of spores and pollen in the strew slides that were made in the laboratory. So I've been around a lot of chemicals. I've had I got a minor degree in chemistry, and I enjoyed all of that time with working at for Gulf Research and Development, Exxon, USA, Gemini Oil Inc., Superior Oil, and finally, after the oil industry collapsed back then, I was actually drilling my own wells in Virginia, and we found oil. The collapse of the oil prices, that oil is still in the ground. It hasn't been pulled out. So the events in my life center around my second marriage. And what is very unusual, how this whole thing started, I went to University of Connecticut for my undergraduate and my master's degree. And in May of 1969, I was taking a different path to class. It was a warm day at that time, very unusually warm, and I wanted to take a different path across the campus, and I went across the campus lawn, and I saw this woman sitting on a blanket, and I heard her yelling at a guy that was walking near the margins of a pond on that lawn, and he wasn't responding to her, and then she got up from that blanket and came over, stopped me, and said, "Hi, I'm Bonnie Nathan. Would you like to feel my baby move?" And I've not heard of anybody that has ever had that happen to them before. It's quite unusual. And she took my hand and placed it on her protruding belly. She was 7 months pregnant with Billy. She would become my second wife 14 years later. I went out to class, and I was waiting for the teacher to show up, and there was another class on the other side of the hall, and I saw this pretty young girl, and I had the courage, after having that happen to me, to go up to her and introduce myself, and her name was Jenny, and she became my first wife. So I met my first two wives about 300 feet apart on the same day.
Wow.
Now, that was just the beginning. Because after that encounter, I kept on having these dreams of meeting this older woman. I didn't know who it was until I met her. And she was Bonnie. She was this would have been 12 years later. And she was obviously older at that time. But I was devastated by my first wife leaving me for another man in Houston, Texas, after I had graduated. We moved down to Texas. And that was really a shocker. And I shared my sorrows with friends at work. And one of them said, well, why don't you come with me to my church? And you can meet other people there. And I did. And I went on a Baptist retreat with that church group. And on the way back on the church bus, I was sitting alone on one of the seats, and this voice started to talk to me. And I looked around to see who was talking to me, and there was nobody there.
Oh, boy.
And the voice said, are you ready to serve God and do whatever he asks you to do?
Oh.
Well, that put me on, I said, oh, my God, the whatever he asks you to do is the part that, I was sort of wondering, okay. I said, well, I'm professing to be a Christian, so I said yes. And then the voice said, there's somebody who needs help. If I bring her to you, will you help her? And I was amazed. I said, wow, here I'm recently divorced, and God is setting me up with a blind date. So I said, sure. When will I meet her? And the voice said, before the year is out. Now, that was on March 23rd, 1981. I wouldn't meet her until December of 1983. And apparently it took some time to get her down to Houston from New Jersey. She grew up in Collingswood, New Jersey, and her estranged husband had moved down to Houston, Texas, was working at NASA in Houston and Pasadena, and she was left behind up in New Jersey, and she was having a lot of medical problems at that time and surgeries, and she wanted needed help. So she contacted him, and he said, well, I'll pay you to come down, bring our son together. That was her second child that she had by this a new husband. And so they were brought down to Houston, and on the December the 15th, 1983, I went to my dentist's Christmas party. Every year he held a Christmas party at his office. And I even got an engraved invitation for that. So when I pulled into the parking lot to go to his office, is an office building in Houston, there was this man and woman. They were loading up some paint pans and brushes in the back of a truck. And the woman asked me, what's going on? Because all these other cars were pulling into the parking lot for the party. And I told her. Then I went out to the party. And a little bit later, she showed up at the party with her friend. And I thought this, wait a minute. They're still in their work clothes. They're not in any, dressed up for the party as everybody else was. She saw me, and she told me to come over and talk to her. And that was a most extraordinary event in my life. I've never had that happen, Nick, to me, where a woman would choose me and said, you come here. I want you. And she said,
That's like, what are the odds? I mean, what are the odds? So anybody would be like, what is going on here? What is really happening?
Right. And she had a bunch of other guys wanting to get her phone number, and they were standing around her trying to talk to her because she was very beautiful. She was redhead, but she was walking with a cane. She had survived three types of deadly cancer in the previous 3 to 4 years. Breast cancer, uterine cancer, and Clark's spreading version of malignant melanoma in her left thigh, and had a part of her muscles removed so that she couldn't walk very well other than with the cane or crutches or wheelchair. And she started talking to me, and I was said, well, this is amazing. You know, she told me that she had recently come down from New Jersey, and she told me that she was having difficulty medically at that particular time. What I didn't realize until I talked to her later is that her husband had brought her down and wouldn't take her to the hospital. She had come from a hospital in New Jersey where they had been doing a drug screen on her because her mother thought she was on taking illegal drugs, and she wasn't. She was on a lot of medications for heart disease, for blood disease, for pain, and a lot of other things. And she wanted to she wanted to stay with her son, her younger son, and he decided to, he was with the father. The father really brought her down because he wanted to get custody of Bonnie because he thought she was going to die. And then she gave me her phone number, and on the first phone call, I was telling her about my life, and she was telling me about hers, and she said she was a hypnotherapist that had a practice in New Jersey, and she had had a business for several years before she had gotten cancer. She had decided to work for an insurance company, AIG, and as a claims adjuster, and had just qualified in time for her operations to get full medical coverage. And that's how she had all these operations for cancer. And she was still in the process of healing. But she said that she had this practice with a friend, her partner, Jim Forber, and helping people overcome various addictions and pain, which was interesting because he helped her learn how to overcome her own pain from all the surgery and cancer.
And, right.
I said, well, I saw this television program on PBS. It was just a few weeks earlier about somebody being hypnotized, this woman being hypnotized by this man on television. And she said, well, describe the man. And I did. And she said, that's my partner. That was us. We were videotaped for a TV show on PBS on how it was the first time that hypnosis was actually demonstrated on television, she said. And I said, wow. So I saw you on television before I met you. Then she tells me how, well, after she came down to Houston, she went over to McGillie's. And didn't realize that McGillie's Dance Club has had a special for handicapped people at that time. They saw her being with a cane, and Mickey Gillie said, go bring that woman up on the stage. So she was brought up on the stage, and I turned my television on at the exact time she walked out on the stage, and I saw Bonnie a second time a week later. What is the odds of that, Nick?
Yeah, the timing is just extraordinary. It's just like one thing after the next, and it's like, what are the odds that any of that could be lining up like it obviously was?
And then I had just bought a new house, and because my job was good enough, I had gotten this house, and she told me about the problems she had with her husband, who didn't want to take care of her anymore and didn't want to take her to the hospital. She came down to Houston in Pasadena and wanted to be taken to the emergency room to get medications. And he said, I already spent all my money on your airfare, so I'm not going to take you. And she said, well, let me call an ambulance. He said, no, I don't want you to use a call an ambulance. I don't want to pay for it. So she hobbled out of his apartment and crossed Ritchie Street in Pasadena, Texas, and collapsed right in the middle of it when her heart stopped. And policeman saw her fall down and stopped and put her in his squad car and raced her to the emergency room. And she had an extraordinary near-death experience, of course. They were able to bring her back. But that was, then you might ask, well, what was wrong with her heart? Her first marriage ended when her husband got out of the military, and he was very jealous of her. They had been sweethearts in high school, he would hit her whenever he saw her talking to another suitable man. He was that jealous. And
boy, something
she
wrong with him. Boy, something really wrong with him on a lot of levels. My goodness.
Well, it was even worse because he killed her. She fixed him breakfast in bed, and he said, "Oh, you're just trying to get around to having cheated on me." And he lured his feet back, and he hit her in the small of the back. She went slamming into the wall, and she said she collapsed to the floor in extreme pain. They rushed her to the hospital, and she died on the operating table. And she then said she was out of her body in the hospital, and she saw them trying to save her and then wheel her body into the morgue. And the doctor who tried to save her was a young doctor, and he was very upset that he had lost this beautiful young woman. This was on the 12th of January, 1971. Keep that date in mind because it's very unusual. It has everything to do with why she chose me. The doctor started to cry, and his tears were dropping on her face, on her dead body in the morgue. And she said she could not bear to see him cry for her. So she entered her body and resurrected it right there in front of it.
But this is so extraordinary. It's just right off the bat. I mean, this is just amazing.
And she woke up to find a name tag on her toe. You don't get one of those unless you're dead. So, and that's how her heart got damaged and why she kept on having, she was on heart medications all of her life after that incident. And the thing that was, she collapsed in crossing Ritchie Street to get to a payphone to get an ambulance, and the policeman picked her up and took her to the emergency room, and she recovered. And then she had enough strength.
Yeah,
she wanted
to stop just a second. I just got to stop you for 1 second. What was the husband doing when he got the news that she wasn't dead?
I don't know. She wouldn't have anything to do with him. She.
I don't blame her for that, of course.
And of course, they had a fight over her older son, who she was pregnant with when I met her at the University of Connecticut campus. So, wouldn't have anything to do with him after that. I got to meet her older son, Billy, and he even came down to Houston and to see her. That was wonderful. But the younger son, Chucky, I told her, I was on the phone, and that you're having all these problems with these men in your life. Why don't you come live with me? And she said, I will. So she decided to bring her son and move in with me in my new brand new house. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And then this was on the she moved in on the 12th of January, 1980, 1974. Remember I said she was killed on the 12th of January, 1971. She moved in on the 12th of January, 1984, and she stayed with me, lived with me for 7 years, and she died on the 12th of January, 1991.
Oh.
And then she appeared over her grave with my mother as a witness, and I got video of it. And it's on the internet, her biography that I wrote called The Passion of Bonnie. And you can see her spirit inside a temple at the Garden of Texas Liberty and then over her grave. And then it was a second sun appeared in the overhead cloud. And a beam of golden light came down from that second sun. This was 8:30 in the morning and captured her spirit. And didn't touch the ground, and we saw the colors of her multicolored spirit ascend into that second sun, and then the sun went out. I didn't know what was happening at the time. I would have to get very involved in studying various religions to understand that what I had witnessed was a Shekinah. Do you know what a Shekinah is?
No, please tell me.
It's a glory cloud. It's the cloud that described that the followers of Jesus saw him when he rose up into the cloud. They called it a Shekinah, a glory cloud. And I saw that happen. And so but this was just the first clue that I had that Bonnie was somebody very, very special. Well, that first weekend
That is an understatement, my friend.
That first weekend we were together. Now, Thursday was the 12th of January. On the 13th of January was a Friday. Then on the 14th and 15th of January, she was living with me at that time. And she sat me down at our kitchen table in the house, and she told me her story about her life. And it was this extraordinary of things that she had happened to her. She was the only person that Elvis Presley gave his owl belt ring to at a concert. And she was sitting in the front row in Philadelphia, and he walks after he finished the song up to the edge of the stage. He points to her, tells her to come up to the stage. He takes off his owl belt buckle and hands it to her and gives it to her.
Now he'd never met her before, obviously, and he spotted her there, and he singled her out and said, come up on that. That's extraordinary.
And after the show was over, I saw this on a video of Elvis's. They actually filmed that, and I saw that happen, so I know it's true that it happened. And she wanted to go return it. She says, "This I can't keep this." And so she tried to go to the changing rooms in the back of the theater, and a bodyguard stopped her, and she pulled out his belt buckle and said, "I want to return this." And he said, "Come right this way." And when he opened the door, she said, "I gave that to you." And I said, "I can't keep this. This is your identity. This is so, this is more than I can possibly keep. So I'll give it back to you if you grant me a wish." And he said, "What is that?" He says, "I want to have a private conversation with you." And they chose to have a special, table in a restaurant where she met him and had this conversation with him. And she asked him all these questions. And then he signed the bill, and I have that receipt from that meal, signed Elvis, as proof that they actually did that.
Now, did she have particular information that she wanted to give him? Did she have any, some vision or something that she wanted to share with Elvis when she said, I would like to speak with you?
I think what she wanted to do is make that connection, because rest of her life, what I learned about her, who she was, what she had been to humanity and our evolution, it's just out beyond anybody's belief. I even have a hard time accepting it, what she told me is true, but there's just so much evidence for it. Now, during that meeting at the kitchen table on the 14th of January, 1984, she was telling me about all of that, all these amazing things that happened. And with she got to meet Harrison and of the Beatles. She got to meet a whole bunch of other. She was very fascinated by musicians. And I said, you need to write a biography of this. This is incredible. And she said, I am. I said, well, whoa, did you bring it with you? And she said, no, it's in storage in New Jersey. Now, this is going to be important because what I'm about to say, I mean, at the time I was wondering, what did I get myself into saying that, yes, I will help this woman out to this unseen and discarnate voice? And what is even more amazing is that there was a woman on the church bus who wanted to take pictures of all of us because of this event that we had participated in. And I asked her, well, can you send me the copies of the pictures? She said, yes. And I have a picture of me sitting in that seat on that church bus, and you can see a ghost-like spirit right next to me.
Boy, I wish I had a Zoom podcast so that we could see that. That's quite extraordinary. Again,
well,
extraordinary.
You can see it online. I wrote her biography. It's called The Passion of Bonnie. Just Google that. And Bruce Cornett. And in there, I show that picture. It's just unbelievable. But at any rate,
Bruce, would you please just repeat what you just said, because it was a little fast, and I want our listeners to be able to do that after the program. So just go slowly, if you would repeat what they have to do on the internet to see all that.
All right. Google The Passion of Bonnie by Bruce Cornett, C-O-R-N-E-T.
Okay.
You should be able to find it on my many websites. But she said, I'm writing a biography, but it's in storage. And I said, this is incredible. I said, then she asked me a very unusual question. She said, would you work with me and help me complete my biography?
Hmm.
And I didn't realize, Nick, what I was getting into when I said, yes, very enthusiastically. I was wondering, what are the chances of all the people that this woman has met and the things that have happened to her, her cancers, her surgeries, her being killed by her first husband and waking up in the morgue. I mean, this is just, out of a science fiction book.
Bruce, you know what? You couldn't write it, because you just couldn't. It's just too. It would have to be from real life, because real life is extraordinary, as we all know. And you can't even make this, no matter how creative you are. This is beyond, I think, almost any creative person. It's just so many extraordinary things going on, one by one by one. So this is quite something.
And she also said, said, after she said she was writing a biography, I asked you, because I thought, oh, wow, I can find out more things that happened to her. And I said, well, could you describe your biography? She said, well, pay attention to what I'm going to say, because what I'm going to describe, anybody would expect. Okay?
Okay.
She said, it's divided into two parts. Who writes a biography about and divides it into two parts? I said, is the first part about your childhood? She says, no, it's about my past lives.
Here we
and
go.
I said,
the moment you would say that, kind of everything stops, because my past lives, that opens up a whole new chapter here.
Oh, big time. when you find out who she is, or what she claims to be. Now, keep in mind, as a scientist, I have to question all of this. I would prefer to think that I was the biggest fool in the world and that she passed off this great story to me, and I actually fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. But you have to follow the trail and to see where it's going, to know where this is going to end up in this story, okay?
Right.
I said, well, it's the second part about your current life. She says, only in part. Well, what I didn't realize was that she was reading my mind. She could read my mind. She was telepathic, and she proved this to me a little bit later in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
She also told me that she was very psychic. She could move objects with her mind. She could alter electronics. She could cause clocks to move faster or slower. We had an ice maker in our refrigerator, and when she was happy, the ice maker would work overtime and it would fill the freezer full of ice cubes that it would push the freezer door open and fall out on the floor. And
wow.
When she was in a bad mood, the ice maker wouldn't work at all, okay?
Yes, I got to interrupt you for just 1 second because I just got a couple of questions I'm just busting to ask you. In her family, her mother, father, her grandmother, her grandfather, or aunts and uncles, would, if you've met them, did any of them have any of these very special powers, these very special things going on? Anyone in her family have anything like this?
No, none of it was inherited. In fact, her grandmother came from Russia, from the steppes of Russia. So, she was an immigrant, and her grandmother was Jewish. And what is interesting that she was born Jewish to a Jewish mother, because females in Israel are the carriers of the Jewish identity, right? And she was raised in a family a Protestant, and then she chose, after she had married her first husband, who was Catholic, and she became a Catholic. So she was born Jewish, raised Protestant, and died Catholic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lots going on.
Yeah, and a lot going on. And she said that she wanted to know if I would help her complete her biography, which I thought was, you know, adding to a manuscript, correct?
Yeah, right.
And what I didn't realize is that I was going to help her fulfill prophecy. And I'll tell you in a moment. And this is the amazing thing. She realized that I was starting to seriously doubt her. And she said, I knew I was going to meet you because I am precognitive. I can see into the future. And I wrote you into my biography in the second part.
Oh.
Well, now I had to see this. Okay?
I guess.
This is crazy. But I said, did you use my last name? She said, no, but I encoded your current last name into four chapter titles, two in the first part, two in the second part. Now, I'm getting this from a person that I really didn't know very well at that moment in my time, my life, and she's telling me this? Okay.
It sounds like she was knowing you probably more than you know you, you know?
Well, I later found out that we have a lifetimes together going back billions of years, okay? So we've been hanging around each other for a long, long time. And that really raises the question of who am I? You know, and I had to work this out.
It does open up another door. That does open up that other door also. Like there's more connection here than you ever dreamt.
Right. So but I didn't have her manuscript, and about 4 months after she had moved in, I got an opportunity to go to her storage area in New Jersey on a weekend, an extended weekend, and she needed some documents, legal documents that were in storage. And I asked her, well, where did you put your manuscript? She says, it's in the top right drawer of my white dresser. Okay? So come that time, I went to storage area and I opened up the drawers and I couldn't find it, the manuscript. I was looking for something that was, you know, pieced together, that wasn't bound, that wasn't, didn't have a covers on it, right? It was pages.
Right.
That's what I envisioned to be a manuscript, right?
I would
because
think
if
so.
If she had already published it, it would be bound, correct?
Exactly.
Whatever. All right. So I come back, and she said, did you find what all the items I'd asked you to look for? And she said, yes, but I could not find your manuscript. And she said, did you look in that top right drawer of my dresser? And I said, yes, but it wasn't in there. The only thing in that drawer was a Holy Bible. And she looked at me and gave me a Mona Lisa smile. She said, I put my manuscript in that drawer.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Here we go. But she should have told you that. Oh, dear.
So she didn't come right out and tell me because she obviously knew that I wouldn't say, okay, gig's up. I can't stay with you no more. Please, I can't have this, you know, somebody that's making up these kinds of stories. But then whenever she was in excruciating pain, glass around her would shatter, explode. And
the vibes were so strong that I've seen people do things like that. That it's so strong that things vibrate to that, they resonate and they can shatter. And what you're saying is it happened to her.
Yes. She was in bed with me and she smoked heavily and she had there was a thick ashtray on the nightstand next to her bed, side of the bed. And she was lighting up a cigarette, and the match she used fell into the hole in her leg where the doctor had taken out all that muscle and tendon. And she screamed bloody murder. Ashtray exploded like a hand grenade, and pieces went flying all over the room.
Wow.
Then the second time we were toasting each other, with wine glasses and, you know, wrapping our arms around, you know, being very close at that moment. And she cringed and the glass in her hand just shattered into 1,000 pieces and fell right down to the floor.
Well, she really vibrates. She broadcasts such a heavy, whatever you want to call it, that it really affects things around her on such a level. But I can believe that. I can.
And when we moved from Houston up to Middletown, New York, for my new job, we had a Ryder truck, and we were pulling our pickup truck in the back, and she and Chucky were sitting to my right. Chucky was in the middle, and Bonnie had her bad leg elevated. She needed to keep it elevated because of the blood circulation in it and up onto the dashboard of the truck. And her foot was only about 3 inches away from the windshield, okay? And she started to cringe, and I could see on her face that something was bothering her. And I said, are you in pain? She says, yes. And all of a sudden, the windshield just shattered with a spider web crack that went up, radiated out. Unlike anything you would ever, it looked like a bullet had hit the windshield. It was
that
violent.
Wow.
So she had these capabilities. She could make watches move faster or slower depending on her mood, and she could see into the future. She could read people's minds. Now, how many people do you, I mean, now there are other people like that in the human society, some extraordinary people with abilities like that.
Yes.
So, but who was she in particular? And after she died and was buried, I went with my mother to videotape where she was buried so that I could send a copy up to her family up north. And her spirit appeared over her grave. You can see the images of it on The Passion of Bonnie. Quite extraordinary. She first came in, her burial area is very strange. Now, I'll just need to go back a little bit and talk about this because after she died, or before she died, I come home and I found a suitcase at the foot of our bed. And I said, "What are you doing?" She says, "I'm going back to Texas." I said, "Are you going to tell me about it?" She said, "I do not want to die here. I want to be buried in Texas." I was shocked by her admission. She wants to go back to Texas. So after she did die, I called my mother and I said, "I'm going to have to bring Bonnie's body back to Houston. And will you go around and try to find a cemetery where we can get a gravesite?" Well, my mother ended up at Memorial Oaks Cemetery in northwest corner of Houston. And when she walked in, she asked the lady behind the desk, you know, are there any places for my daughter-in-law to be buried? And she said, what is her name? And my mother said, "Bonnie Lee Cornett." And she said, "Wait a minute." And then she went over to her Rolodex or directory and started flipping through it. And she said, "Oh, yes, we already have a place for her."
What?
It's in the Garden of Texas Liberty. And she said, it's already, she has the crypts number 12 and number 13.
Did Bonnie arrange that herself? Are we saying that she had arranged that?
Yes, she when she was going to die, she knew she wouldn't tell me. And on our wedding day, she wanted to, she had her wedding dress custom made with the design of the triangular design of the Garden of Texas Liberty with a circular temple in the middle, woven into her dress, wedding dress, with a collar that was represented the temple, and then a triangular area across her shoulders coming down, you know, the point between her breasts. And you can see this. She wanted me to take a picture of her coming down the stairs. And she said, "Go down to the bottom of the stairs and take a picture of me up here as I'm coming down the stairs." Why did she want me to do that, Nick? This was another clue to me that she had come from up there and incarnated as a human. That was her way of telling me who she was.
Now, Bruce, I got to ask you, Bonnie was a regressive hypnotist. Did she undergo her own regressive hypnotism from someone else, another professional? Did she ever go through that?
Her partner. They practiced hypnotizing each other all the time. Yeah, so they could get very good at it. But she never hypnotized me, and I always wondered why. Well, she didn't have to.
Say that also. You would think that she would want to do that for some reason, yeah.
She just had to read my mind. That was an open book. Not long before she died, a month or so before she died, she started to teach me how to communicate with her telepathically. She wanted me to recognize four thoughts in my head.
Right.
Pardon?
Wow. That makes sense that you would want that.
Right. I was coming home from work, and it was late, and I didn't have the energy to cook a meal for her. So I stopped off at McDonald's. And when I got home, I walked into our condo, and she calls out from the bedroom, "Hi, honey, did you get me my Big Mac with extra pickles and Coke with extra ice?" I'm saying, "How did she know?" And I walked in with her, holding the bag and the drink, and I said, "How did you know?" She said, "Because I asked you for them." And oh my God, at that point, I would stop off at McDonald's again and again, and I'd say, "Okay, what do you want? Do you want the same thing? Do you want something different?" And I would listen for her thoughts in my head. So I got very good at reading her thoughts. And I could. But the amazing thing, Nick, is that after she died, she kept on talking to me.
But she kept the communication going. That does make sense, though. Since you could do that, it makes sense that she'd want to keep that channel certainly going. Because obviously you were resonating to her on a very special level. That's pretty obvious. Well, before we go on, Bruce, I'm looking at the clock, and I want to just insert something here in the program, and that is if our listeners would want to communicate with either Bruce or myself and ask a question or give us a comment, we would welcome that. And I'm going to give you my email address, and you could email me that, and if it's addressed to Bruce, I'll give it to him, or if it's addressed to me, I'll answer it myself. I'm going to give you that email again, Nick. NYNY1, that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, NICKNYNY1, and that's the numeral 1, at gmail.com. Okay, so I want to take care of that, Bruce. I'll put that in the
Okay, and I want to give my email address for the audience as well.
Yeah,
I'll share those
go ahead.
Emails with you. It's Cornette Bruce, one word, all lowercase, Cornette Bruce at yahoo.com.
And if you will, would you spell it out letter by letter just in case?
Just in case. It's Cornette Bruce at yahoo.com.
Okay, great.
And,
just so they have.
Also, if people are interested in all my videos, my 30-some-odd videos, you just go YouTube space Bruce Cornette, and you should pull up my webpage, my YouTube page.
Repeat that address again slowly, okay, please?
YouTube, write that out, then Bruce space Cornette. And you'll
and
get
there's
my...
No spaces between any of the letters there, right? Just the straight through?
No, there are spaces. There's after YouTube, there's a space, then Bruce space, and then Cornette.
Okay, great. Just want to make sure that they're correct.
You're going to get a lot of hits on instruments, okay, because my last name is spelled like an instrument.
Hey, by the way, I want to ask you that. Was there anybody in your family that played cornet? I mean, how did that come about? Do you have any backstory to that?
Only my brother. He played the trombone. But I don't have any musicians in my family that I can remember.
Just curious. Thank you.
But one thing that did happen that I want to tell the listeners is that Bonnie died in 1991. Internet was just becoming popular at that time.
Right.
It wasn't until 1993 or 94 that you could purchase electronic devices that could take scenes off of a videotape and convert them into an internet movie or you can capture individual pictures, okay? And I got one, and the videotape that I had taken at her graveside, I knew there was something special about that cloud that was over us and that beam of light that came down. So I took all of those frames and went through each frame over that interval where that light would have over the cloud as I drove into the Garden of Texas Liberty. And lo and behold, in three frames of a 33 frame per second video, pulled back just enough to expose this huge white dome-shaped mothership sticking out of the cloud.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Wow.
And that was the first time I had direct evidence that Bonnie was an extraterrestrial.
Now, with that, I want to ask my producer, Hercules. Hercules, if you would be so kind, how much time do we have left? I know it's coming close.
We have less than 4 minutes.
Okay. Bruce, at that point, I'd like to do this with you, Bruce. If you can do this, I would like you to continue with another part of this incredible story that's such a personal account of some extraordinary events. So my next show for Disclosure Network is on Saturday, February 4th. Would you be available to do another podcast continuing on?
Oh, yes. Here's something that a bombshell. I'm going to drop another bombshell. Bonnie,
Wait, before you do that, I don't have that kind of time because I got to do a cutoff. So I'm just going to say that, folks, Saturday night, February 4th, Bruce Cornett is going to do another part of this extraordinary story. Bruce, I cannot thank you enough for being my guest today. And I want to just say to all our listeners that this is one of those stories that you will not ever forget. This is Nick Curto for Disclosure Network New York, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. Till next time,
Nick,
keep informed, stay safe, and be very, very kind to one another. Much love to everyone out there everywhere, not only on this planet, but far, far beyond. We are all part of an immense intergalactic family in this vast master universe. Good night, and much love
one
to
word,
all.
One word, Nick, Star Wars. It's related to Star Wars.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much, Bruce. I totally enjoyed.
All right.
Okay. And thank you both for a very interesting show. You've given us a lot to think about. Thanks also to our audience for tuning in. Whether you clicked on the link and found yourself here, whether you're quietly waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to catch us or catch us again on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Good night. Happy New Year to everybody. Good night.